Greetings, Earthers, Martians, Belters, members of the OPA. Welcome to episode 16 of Expanse, the unofficial podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker.
And I'm your host, Nikki Starwalker.
Welcome back to the show, Nikki.
Thanks.
Episode 16, can you believe it?
No.
That's a lot. It doesn't seem like it's been long enough to make 16 episodes of this show.
Yeah.
So today we are talking about the seventh episode of The Expanse called Windmills. So Nikki, what'd you think of episode 7, Windmills?
Oh, it was good. There was some really, really great acting in this episode and some really beautiful scenes. I found out that James S. A. Corey wrote this one.
Yeah, pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that's really great. And I liked that they got to really get their fingers in there and have a say on what happens in that show. And I know they already do in a lot of ways, but this was neat to see something that they wrote with a lot of help, I know. It's a whole crew. But it starts off with Miller, and he decides to go to the docks. And on the way, he made a phone call to Jules Pierre Mao, Julie's dad. And I thought it was interesting that he let on that Brass doesn't give him these kinds of cases if they want them solved.
Yeah.
It's apparent that he doesn't have any loyalty anymore.
Well, why would he?
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot of corruption in Star Helix security. So.
Yep. Yeah. So what about you, Lex?
So we have a few different things going on in this episode. We've got Miller, who is kind of wrapping things up on Ceres and heading off to Eros. We've got the crew on the Rocinante dealing with a spy they find on board. And then we have Avasarala speaking with one of Holden's moms, the one that actually carried him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I found myself wondering with the scenes with Avasarala in this episode was where's the rest of the family?
Right.
we see the one mother and a man that's in the kitchen at the very beginning, and that's it. So I was just kind of wondering where is everybody? I mean, he's got this big extended family with all these, you know, relatives, but this big house, there's like two people in it.
I wondered about that too. And I like that scene where they're in the kitchen because Avasarala really contrasts with her surroundings in this home. You know, it's all wood and she's got her jewels on and this red fur coat.
Yeah. And it was kind of cool. I don't know if you noticed, but the house wasn't at all modernized beyond what we would see today.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of cool to show that, you know, there are people that are living lives that are very similar to what we live today. And, you know, someone like Holden's family living, you know, in this log cabin, like out in Montana, you know, they're kind of roughing it maybe compared to how some people live in this day and age.
Yeah, I'm sure they looked very quaint to Avasarala.
So, yeah, I just really want to know where everybody was. I guess there were a lot of fences that needed mending.
Yeah.
Because it was the middle of winter, and unless they have livestock, there's not much to do on a farm in the winter.
Oh,
so okay. So you'd think everybody would be in the house kind of hanging out together, but I don't know. Maybe they all have different houses. I liked the bits with the spy on the Rosi, which is something that was added compared with what's in the book. I really enjoyed the spy character because he was such a good spy. And I loved, you know, his attempts at using psychology, trying to humanize himself to Amos by saying, oh, I have to pee for 2 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
Of course, totally doesn't work on Amos. Like this whole trying to get under his skin and get him to see you as a person doesn't work. Did not work at all on Amos. He was not falling for that.
No, but I like how we got to see some of how Amos works in those scenes because he sees himself as disposable.
What makes you say that?
Well, I thought that he was saying something about how, you know, they're all part of the churn and if he dies, it doesn't really matter. And even if the spy dies, it's not going to have any effect on the end result.
See, I didn't see that as him thinking he's especially expendable. I just saw that as he was saying, if you die, it doesn't matter. If you survive, it doesn't matter. Like, I felt like he was saying that, you know, we're all just reacting to a changing situation. And, you know, people like to try to find quote unquote meaning in things and, oh, you know, this happened, so it was meant to be, or this didn't happen, so it wasn't meant to be. And I felt like Amos was just basically saying, you know, that's bullshit. Like, this is all meaningless. None of this has any meaning beyond what's actually happening. And, you know, there's no point in trying to find meaning or find reasons for what's happening. You're better off just focusing on survival and reacting to what's going on around you than trying to, like, put things in the boxes and try to make it all make sense.
I see.
I thought it was interesting that Jim's mom thought he was dead. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, nothing has been communicated to her before Avasarala talked to her as to what's actually going on with Holden. She just knows, you know, what she's heard on the news. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting.
Yeah. While we were there, we got a better understanding of Holden, too. You know, his mom said that he was raised to be a leader, but he was fighting a battle that he could never win. And I thought that was interesting how he may see himself as the White Knight.
Yeah, I wonder what she meant by fighting a battle he can't win. Like, what's the battle he can't win? Because it seems like they won the battle. They got their land. They pulled their little shenanigans, you know, in order to get all this farmland, which Avasarala made reference to, you know, how they kind of found this legal loophole, you know, to be able to do this. You know, and she talks about, you know, the government sending goons. So presumably, you know, they kind of have to fight to keep it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, maybe she sees it as eventually the government's going to take the land away from them. It's just, how long can they put that off?
Right.
I thought what was interesting was how she talked about how they raised Holden to think that he existed because the land needed him and all this crap. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember reading any of this in the books. Maybe it's something that comes later, or maybe it's just something from Ty's huge binder that was just never in the books. But it really, to me, explains some aspects of his character. And we've talked about on the show before how he just assumes he's right. And, you know, when things work out due to luck, he interprets that as almost like a sign from the universe that he was right and justified. Uh-huh. And so I think you kind of see where that comes from. You know, they were raising him in this very kind of hippie kind of, you know, you were born to protect the land and you have this destiny and all this kinds of thing. So, yeah, that kind of makes the character make a little more sense to me. Doesn't make him any less annoying, but at least I understand now why he's that way. Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite bits was with Amos and Holden in this episode. And I really like what Wes Chatham is doing with Amos. I think of all the characters. I mean, all the characters are kind of tropic to some degree. And then we see a lot of kind of taking a new angle with a trope or turning it on its head or things like that. Like, for instance, you know, in some ways, Alex is the very tropic, like, space pilot, you know, like Han Solo or Wash, or, you know, where he's like this hot dog pilot, you know. But then we find out, well, he wasn't actually a combat pilot. He flew transports, you know. So I dig that, you know. I mean, you have to have the tropes because that's what kind of grounds people in the genre and in the story. But you don't want them to be cliches, right? And it's a fine line between a trope and a cliche. And I think of all the characters, Amos easily could have been the cliche.
Yes.
Right? And even in the books, you know, it's not until later in the books that you kind of start learning ways that he's not the cliche. But I really like, because they could have made him the cliche, and they could have, the writers could have been lazy with his character and just been like, oh, hey, we've got this character that's what you see is what you get. You know, very, you know, easy to understand and non-complex, and focus on the other characters that kind of have all these little buttons and levers you can play with, you know, but they didn't do that. And I think between the way they write his scenes and the way Wes is delivering them, like it's really working for me. And there is one line that I just loved. They've got the spy on board. They've got the Martian boarding skiff coming at them, going to board them and inspect them, which, you know, if that happens, it's all over, right? Mm-hmm. and they're trying to figure out what to do. They're trying to get the operations locker open to get these codes. And Amos goes to the airlock and Holden goes after him to see what he's up to. And, you know, he's got a big gun and he's ready for if they try to board, you know, he's going to take them down.
Right.
And he and Holden have this, it's not even really an argument. Like they basically, Amos is like, this is what I'm going to do. And Holden is like, this is what I'm going to do. And it's like, all right, we understand each other, you know?
Yeah.
And basically Holden is supposedly going to shoot him in the head, which I don't think he would have really done it.
No.
And I think Amos knew that. But then they end up finding the codes. And at the last second, you know, the Martian ship leaves. Mm-hmm. And Amos just kind of like turns around and just kind of smiles and is like, oh, that worked out. and it's just the complete lack of emotional impact.
Right.
You know, like this is just supporting my theory that he's actually a sociopath because, you know, he's got this guy pointing a gun at his head. And it's like, yeah, maybe his read on Holden is he's not going to pull the trigger, but he doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's this moment of, okay, it's all over. We don't need to kill each other. And there wasn't even like relief or, oh, I dodged that bullet. It's just like, oh, well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you kind of saw in Holden in that moment, like that's what freaked him out more than anything else. And that's why, you know, he's going to Naomi and saying, you got to get this guy under control and we're getting him off the ship because mm-hmm. this guy's freaking sociopath.
Yeah, I think Holden was very creeped out by it.
Well, and especially because Holden comes from a place of passion. Mm-hmm. Like everything he does is emotional. Like he is just like in the sea of emotion all the time. Mm-hmm. And to face someone like Amos, who is the complete opposite, who is almost devoid of emotion. And when he feels emotions, they seem inappropriate to the situation. You know, that's right. Got to be very disconcerting. Because they're on very opposite ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because I would argue that they're both a little unhinged.
Yeah.
I don't think Holden is any less crazy than Amos is, especially now that we know kind of how he was raised and what he was taught. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, it's also clear now, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, Holden can make nice and yeah. Amos can't. So Holden is a little bit better at blending in. He's like Dexter bringing the donuts, you know, to work every day. Amos just hasn't figured out to bring donuts. If he brings the crew donuts every day, they won't notice that he's a sociopath.
Right.
It works.
Except one of them. One of them might notice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved how the spy overheard Holden complaining about Amos and tried to use that later on with Holden. He tried to manipulate the situation and again make himself more human in Holden's eyes by saying, you're not like that monster, Amos, are you?
Yeah.
So that was interesting. But yeah, I like the spy character.
Yeah, he was. I liked it because he was trying to manipulate them and I like it because it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. I'm really looking forward to when they find out what he's really up to.
Yeah.
So also in this episode, Avasarala goes through all this with Holden's mom, and then she leaves and she talks to Ehrenreich, and Ehrenreich's like, basically, yeah, I'm sending a black ops team after Holden and they're going to take him out. So I think we're going to have a very interesting final three episodes of the season.
Yeah, intense.
And we know from the sneak peek for episode 8 that we're finally going to see Miller and Holden and Naomi and Amos and everybody finally come together in mm-hmm. episode 8, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, shit's going to hit the fan.
Yeah, it's, man, end of the season's going to be rough for people because I feel like the show is really going to hit its stride in these last three episodes and mm-hmm. then we're going to have to wait for season 2.
I know. You know, jumping back to the ship, I really like how they're still using code words, even in far in the future. And of course, we can't go the whole episode without saying donkey balls.
Yeah, and they're using, you know, the code words are stored analog mm-hmm. style because you can't hack that.
Right.
Right? The only way to get those code words is to get onto that ship, break into the lockbox and get the thing out. You know, right. If it's on a computer, it can be hacked. It can be stolen remotely. So that's kind of cool that, you know, that kind of nod to, in some ways, the old methods of data protection are even more important in the future because, you know, you can't make a computer that can't be hacked, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just impossible. It's like this arms race.
Yeah.
It's like viruses versus bacteria. They're just constantly evolving together and, you know, it's just the way it's always going to be. I love at the end, we see Miller leaving Ceres on a transport ship. And I love the little space tugboats that are pulling the ship out of the dock at Ceres. I just love like those little touches, you know, and you see the little tugs, you know, detaching from it and flying off. And it's just really cool stuff.
Very, very cool. And speaking of little touches, Miller, he went to Julie's apartment and was tearing it apart. And there were some beautiful shots in there. I don't know if you caught it, but there was like orange light from the door and this blue light everywhere else. And it just looked gorgeous. And we got to see the bird again.
Yeah. Yeah. The bird, Miller seems to have a special relationship with this bird because it's like every time he sees it, it's like this meaningful moment for him.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's not the same bird, you know, right. That there's more than one sparrow on Ceres and he's not by chance seeing the same one over and over. But I don't know. I guess we'd have to pick the writer's brains to know if there's some deep meaning to this sparrow.
I'm sure there is. And just not picking up on
it's
it yet.
It's a spirit animal.
Yeah.
It's not even real. Nobody else even sees it. It's just completely in his imagination. So I thought we'd bring up something on the show. I know we don't talk a lot about the books anymore, but, you know, we were wondering about Octavia because she's taking a much bigger role in the story than she did in the books. And then we were wondering about Candace, Miller's ex-wife. And you told me this week that you said that they basically combined the two characters?
That's right. On Sci-Fi's website, they have a spot where they summarize each episode and what happened. And they do this with pictures. And on one of those pages, they had a picture of Octavia and they explained how it's set up differently from the books. But I really like her scenes and I thought she was a good character to have in the show.
Yeah, I think that was a good move. I know we talked to... Or I theorized before the show came out, like how they were going to handle Miller. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to talk too much about that because some of it could be spoilery. But the problem with Miller, as presented in the books, is he's always by himself. Mm-hmm. He's always in his own head. He doesn't have any friends. The closest thing he has to a friend or a companion or anything like that is Havelock. And they don't like have conversations where they talk about anything.
Right.
And he did in his book or in the books, he has this ex-wife, Candace. And a lot of times when he's alone in his hole or his apartment, he'll have these kind of imaginary conversations with her where he's thinking about something and then he imagines like how she would react to him doing or thinking or saying that thing. Mm-hmm. And throughout the series of the stories, he kind of has this with different characters where he always has this kind of imaginary companion inside his mind that he's kind of bouncing ideas off of or whatever that's reacting to what he's thinking and what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So what I was theorizing before the show came out is that they might actually cast Candace and have her kind of like on Dexter, how Dexter would talk to his father, Harry, all the time, but he wasn't really there. But mm-hmm. we would see Harry and we would see them having conversations. I thought they might do something like that with Miller and Candace and then later Miller and another character or two that I'm not going to mention. And they may still do that because that's in the future. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, instead of that, they chose to kind of combine the character of Candace with Octavia. And I think that was a smart move because he needed someone to talk to. Because in a TV show, I mean, you could have a voiceover like narrating his thoughts, but that's like really lame. And it would kind of fit with the noir trope that they're, you know, that they're using.
Yeah.
But it would get old really fast. And it's really hard to do. Like Dexter. I don't know why I keep bringing up Dexter this episode, but Dexter is a show that did that well.
Yeah.
Like Dexter was always monologuing and it worked really well. But for every incident that you can think of or show that you can think of that does that well, you can come up with 20 that did it not so well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think it was a good move having an actual flesh and blood character that he can relate to. I'm glad that they made it someone else in Star Helix that maybe, you know, obviously it seems like he had some kind of romantic involvement with her at some point. Mm-hmm. I think that works a lot better than if they would have just brought his ex-wife into the story. Mm-hmm. And the thing with the ex-wife is that would have been like a subplot.
Right.
Right. You can't just have this ex-wife in the story and have them interacting all the time and not do anything with that.
Yeah.
Where if it's someone else on the force that maybe, you know, he knocked boots with once or twice, you know, it doesn't require that. I mean, they right. could go that route if they wanted to and say, oh, their relationship is going to evolve or something, but they don't have to. Like, if this is the last we see of Octavia, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you got the feeling that, or I got the feeling that it would be the last time we saw her because they had a little goodbye. And I loved her quote there. She was like, "That this is how you say goodbye with a creepy message."
Yeah. Yeah. Which we didn't hear the creepy message. Which
no.
is disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually confused by that the first time we watched it because I was like, oh, was the creepy message the one that he sent when he was in the subway car that he sent to Julie's dad? And I'm like, was there two messages there? And I missed that he went from one to the other.
Yeah.
But then watching it the second time, I'm like, no, there's just the thing he sent to Julie's dad. So I'm wondering and guessing mm-hmm. that maybe there was another scene that got cut out, that maybe they wrote it in the script, or maybe I hope they actually shot it. So, you know, when we get our behind the scenes stuff, you know, that can be a scene that they cut out that we can see where he sends another, because I could see them writing it and saying, okay, we're going to have the scene where he sends this message to Octavia mm-hmm. and it sounds like he's going to commit suicide. And then we have her showing up and seeing him cashing out his gambling money or whatever.
Yeah.
But then later being like, well, we've got that scene. And then we've got the scene of him sending the message to Julie's father. And they're too similar. We can't have both those scenes in the same episode. It'll seem redundant. And then they had to pick which was most important for the story. But then they still have the thing with Octavia, the kind of callback to the scene that got cut out. And you right. see that a lot in TV shows and movies where there'll still be a callback to a scene that was originally there and mm-hmm. then got cut out. So maybe that's something we'll get to see in the future, like they actually shot it. And it's kind of fun seeing those, like we might see it with like just green screens behind them because they shot it, but then they didn't do all the, you know, effects and stuff. But
yeah.
I'd love to see that. That'd be fun.
It would be. That's a great idea. And I love how in that scene, there was some great acting again between the two of them. I think that was my favorite scene of the show. And he just says something like, I better do this one alone when Octavia tries to be a partner with him. And then he says something like, bad timing, my specialty. And it was just a really nice send off. And the music was perfect for it. And I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was really digging Wes Chatham in this episode. I was really digging Thomas Jane. I don't know, in the books, like, I know, you know, when we used to discuss the books, like, you really liked Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, he was always just kind of, eh. I didn't like him. I didn't dislike him. He was just kind of there. Like as a character, he didn't really grab me. I wasn't really interested in him.
Okay.
But Thomas Jane has just brought him to life. And like, I'm a huge Miller fan now. And,
yes.
and that's all Thomas Jane, man. Cause in the books, I was just kind of like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, so every episode, all the actors are doing a phenomenal job, but mm-hmm. it seems like every episode, there's always a few performances that just really jump out at me. And,
yeah.
and this episode, it was definitely Wes Chatham and Thomas Jane, man, they're just nailing it.
Yeah, I know. It was wonderful. And I also like the chemistry between Elise and Vassarala, though. That was great, too. But yeah, some of the delivery in this episode is just beautiful.
Who's Elise?
Isn't that Holden's mom?
Oh, okay.
I didn't
catch her name.
Okay.
So yeah, not a lot of like action in this episode, but I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of action in the next few episodes wrapping up the season. And I think that's really all I have to say about this one. What about you, Nikki? Anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think we covered it. It was a nice episode, but I'm very anxious to see the next one.
If you head on over to sci-fi.com, they have a section of videos, and you can see sneak peeks of the next episode and all kinds of other stuff. We've mentioned it quite a few times on the show. But if you watch the sneak peek for the episode coming out this coming week, mm-hmm. we get a little bit of, I think it's Holden, like saying to Miller, who the hell are you? Or something like that. So we finally see them come together, which is going to be great. For me, this is where the story really took off in the books. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was enjoying it up to this point, but when Holden and Miller and everybody else, when they come together, like that's where it really takes off.
We're just getting started.
Yep. Just in time for the end of the season. And then everybody can wait 8 months or whatever it's going to be until season two.
Oh, don't remind us.
I know, right? Hopefully it won't be that long. Maybe we should have done this at the beginning of the show. But speaking of season two, it has been confirmed that season two will be 13 episodes instead of 10.
Oh, okay.
Which will be awesome.
Yeah.
Three more episodes next season.
I love it.
Hopefully, though, each season will be longer than the one before. I tell you, I'm not a fan of these 10 episode seasons. I'm sure it's great for everyone involved.
Yeah.
That they don't have to do, 23, 24, 25 episode seasons mm-hmm. anymore, because I'm sure that was grueling. I mean, there's some shows that we still watch, like Supernatural, I think does 23 episode seasons now mm-hmm. or still. But yeah, the norm now is 10 yeah. episodes. Some shows only do 8 even.
Yeah.
So I get it. But then some of those shows are doing more than one season in a year.
Okay.
So I feel like 10 episodes a year is kind of not a lot.
No, it's not.
Not if you want to keep people interested,
Yeah. I will say, though, that the production value is so high in these shows that have 10 episodes.
Yeah.
That I can kind of understand it. They're like little movies.
Yeah.
But yeah. From a fan's point of view, I want more.
I'm really curious, and I hope Sci-Fi will release some information about this. I'm really curious to see what happens with the number of views that they're getting, which I don't know how well they can really track like people watching on TV, but they can definitely track people watching online. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see what happens with the trend of how many views they're getting of each episode every week once the season one is over. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like these days more and more people have like the Netflix mentality. Like we watched Jessica Jones in like a week and a half, I think. Yeah. We watched the whole first season. And it's a thing now, right? Binge watching TV shows. Like Netflix has made this a thing. And I think these days there's a lot of people that really prefer to watch it that way. And that's just your average run-of-the-mill TV show. And then you consider a show like The Expanse or Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. where there's so much going on. I really feel that even more with those shows, like you kind of want to watch it all at once.
Yeah.
I know we're fans of Game of Thrones, and yeah, we watched, every week, when the episode comes out, but usually what we do is right before a new season is we watch the previous season again mm-hmm. and we just binge watch it. And I much more, even though it's the second time I've seen it, I much more enjoy watching those as a binge than one a week.
Yes.
Because you miss a lot of the nuances when you're having to wait 7 days between each episode.
Right.
So my guess is that they're going to see a lot of views once episode 10 is out. That there are people that want to watch it, but are waiting until it's all out. So they, especially people that watch online.
Yeah.
Because you can just go on Sci-Fi's website and they're all up there, mm-hmm. which is awesome, by the way, Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
So cool that you're leaving all the episodes up. I wish you would have them up for free on your YouTube channel for people like us that use a Roku so I can watch them on my TV and not have to watch on my computer. Because, on their website, you have to watch it on a computer. You can't watch it on like a Roku or something like that.
Yeah.
But super cool that they're all up, because I can't think of another current TV show where you can do that. A lot of times they'll have like a few episodes up, like the most 2 or 3 recent episodes, mm-hmm. but they don't have the whole season where you can just go and watch them all back to back.
So right.
That's super cool that they're doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I I don't know if we'll ever see those numbers, but I'd love to know if they see a spike, you know, of binge watchers after season one is over.
Yeah.
I guess that's about everything we have to say about episode 7, Windmills. The only thing I want to add is I think a better title for this episode would have been Welcome to the Churn.
Yeah, that would have been sweet.
So that's going to wrap it up for us for episode 16. We'll be back next week talking about the next episode, episode 8 of The Expanse, which I'm blanking on the title of now. But if you'd like to reach us, a great way to do so is by email at expansepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker.
You can follow me at Nikki Starwalker.
And I'm also on Google Plus Lex Starwalker. I want to send a special thank you and shout out to our Tier 5 patron, Mr. Steve Strickland. Let's hear it for Steve.
Yay. Woo!
Yeah, Steve! Woo! So Steve is just one of the many esteemed patrons that we have for Starwalker Studios that help us keep the lights on here and help us keep producing high quality podcasts. So if you'd like to support us and help keep us going, just visit the show notes for the show at starwalkerstudios.com. And at the bottom of the show notes, we have all kinds of ways that you can help out. Some of them are even free.
Yes. And a big thank you to those who donated recently. We got a couple nice donations.
Yes. Thank you very much. So until next week, do conserve your oxygen and your water. Resources are precious in the outer solar system.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Flip and burn, baby. Flip and burn.
Donkey balls.